the HTB podcast. Subscribe now so you don't miss future episodes.
Hello, welcome to this AHDB podcast. What do I get for my levy? Is that a question you have an answer for, or would you like it answered? I'm guessing the latter. And so in this podcast, the AHDB potato sector takes the opportunity to set out the value your levy brings to you and the wider industry. Your hard-earned cash funds vital storage work as well as the field trials conducted at the strategic potato farms. These so-called spot farms are committed to discovering and sharing the best growing methods and practices. As a levy payer, you also fund crop protection research, exports activities, education and market analysis work. All this as well as marketing campaigns, and this has resulted in influencing 12% more consumers to think of potatoes as healthy food. I'm John Bates, and we've invited three levy payers to discuss areas of AHDB's most important and valuable work: marketing, storage, and spot farms. The growers ask questions and challenge the work being done by AHDB.
Yeah, COVID-19 has provided some really unforeseen complications to the 19 to 20 growing season. What did the AHDB do through this time to actually try and help the levy payer and to grow sales through that very challenging time? Nicola, some levy payers may, you know, criticise the AHDB's reaction to the coronavirus pandemic and the marketing campaign that followed as being too sort of slow. And how do you think the AHDB are adapting to become more of a flexible and reactive approach? Why have we not been, you know, advertising on more traditional mediums such as magazines and terrestrial television? You know, a lot of levy payers would see, well, isn't this an opportunity to spend more on marketing and more and capitalising on that situation? What is there any means in which levy payers can convey that to the board, or would?
Let's go to the first interview, which deals with marketing and looks at the various campaigns.
Hello, everyone. I'm Alison Levitt. I'm the interim chair for Potatoes. I became a board member in April 2019. I joined as an independent to bring a commercial and marketing perspective to the board, given my business career in food and drink and my background in marketing. I'd now like to go on and introduce you to Michael Wellham. Michael's a levy payer, although today he's going to be taking part in this interview very much with an industry representation in mind. Michael's been involved in potato production for 20 years, and his current role is farming manager for Fairfields Farming Company, which involves some 400 hectares of pre-packed and crisping potatoes in Essex, mainly for the Fairfields brand. And then the third person I'd like to introduce is Nicola, better known as Nick Dodd, who's a senior marketing manager at AHDB. Nick's been with AHDB for over 10 years, started out on the marketing side with beef, followed by lamb, followed by pork, and now has responsibility in the area of crops and dairy with a particular focus on potatoes, so saving the best till last. So I think at this point, we're going to hand over to Michael, who's going to be leading the interview and firing the questions, predominantly you, Nick, but a bit me. And the topic of conversation is really around the marketing work we do at AHDB for potatoes. Now, I know from talking to a lot of levy payers that there's very split opinion about whether the levy should be spent all on research and storage, or whether, in fact, it should all be going on marketing. So over to you. So we'll talk about the challenges of the potato industry has been facing in the last few years from a market and sales perspective.
So the potato industry had many challenges in the last few years from a sales perspective. This has mainly been due to a continued phase of oversupply that's not been really matched by market demand, so prices being lower than average. This has been also enhanced by extreme competition between the multiples, packers and processors, and this has led to margins being squeezed further down the supply chain as they all compete for volume and market share. This has led to many challenges from a growing point of view.
I guess, Michael, it'd be fair to say that, you know, there've also been concerns about the rising in growth in things like rice and pasta, and where's the voice of potatoes in all of that, and what we're doing to ensure volume growth. So, Nick, you've got plenty of history on potatoes with regard to that. Perhaps talk about some of the campaigns we've done in the past and how successful they've been at stimulating growth in the volume of potatoes.
Yeah, so over the years, I've done a number of campaigns. The big campaign was between 2015 and 2018, and that was our More Than a Bit on the Side, Bud the Spud campaign. Prior to that, we'd seen a steady decline in the consumption of potatoes at about -3% each year. And we really need to sort of jolt the market to really make potatoes more front of mind for consumers. And that three-year campaign, which we worked in tandem with Bord Beer and was partly funded by the EU, it was about a 4 million campaign, actually. That was really to steady the decline, but actually we saw some growth during that period as well. So it worked really well in terms of reminding people about the relevance of potatoes and the key features and benefits of potatoes and encourage them, consumers, to go out and go on and buy them and cook them in a number of different ways.
Yeah, COVID-19 has provided some really unforeseen complications to the 19 to 20 growing season. And it's quite a broad question, how has coronavirus has affected the industry as a whole? It's provided many challenges and impacts which have not all been negative. But, the first lockdown, depending in which sector you're operating in, was either positive or negative. In terms of packing, many growers saw 10 to 15% upsurge in volumes, but also was matched with a sort of almost halving of the market price overnight due to the closing of the processing and food service sector. This also led to many growers struggling with dumping of stocks, and then led in turn to some businesses having extreme financial difficulties. So, it's interesting to know, Nick, what did the AHDB do through this time to actually try and help the levy payer and to grow sales through that very challenging time?
So, yes, when we initially COVID hit, we saw people rushing out to stockpile potatoes, which was good news for the retail sector. Obviously, not so good news for the food service sector, as you said. So really, it was then trying to make sure that we could maintain this demand in the retail sector to try and make up some of the losses for food service. So our objectives was really trying to inspire people to use potatoes in a number of different ways, to then try and get them to add another potato dish to their normal repertoire. So think of new ways to use potatoes by inspiring them. We looked at how we could do this quite quickly to be able to respond with speed. So as we've had a successful campaign with Bud the Spud a couple of years previously, we had a number of assets already to hand that had proven success in the past. The sentiment and the measures that we tested against had all been really positive. And we had content in a number of different ways. We had video content, posters, and social media assets. So the logical thing in terms of best money for the return on the money that we've got, rather than go and create a new campaign, which would mean extra cost on creative and testing, and then also the time lag. And we thought it was much better to actually go and serve the content again. And that was across a number of different channels. We're on TV for the first time, but the Spud was not on the big screen, but he was on video on demand. So that was on ITV for 3 weeks, ITV catch up. And you could see him on big shows like The Chase, Britain's Got Talent, Coronation Street. And that was viewed by, 716,000 times the video was reviewed on that 3 week period. And then also we were on posters outside retailer stores. So as people were standing in the supermarket queues for lengthy times, the digital adverts were served just as they went into the entrance. So that really was a great way to inspire people with new recipe ideas and the key messages that we wanted to put out, and really sort of prompt them just before they were purchasing. So they were seen outside 284 Tesco, Asda and Sainsbury's stores and seen by over 570,000 people. So that was really positive. We also were on social media. So during that time, a lot of people were just sat at home on their phones, looking at social media on Facebook, Instagram, Pinterest. So we were serving our adverts that were recipe videos and also static images about recipes and some of the Bud the Spud messages, really sort of to try and reach people at the time when they were thinking about food, thinking about writing their shopping list, or then outside the stores. So dial up some messages really around versatility, taste, ease, convenience and health, all those sort of messages to try and drive people to choose extra potato dishes. And those were seen by over 5 million people. So we really reached a wide array of people during that period when they're in lockdown.
As you say, Nicola, a lot of the marketing campaigns have recently been conducted with online social media, and some growers would suggest that that they only reach a certain demographic and audience, and are just some people might ask, why have we not been advertising on more traditional mediums such as magazines and terrestrial television?
Terrestrial television is a great way to reach people. It's very expensive, though, so you need really big budgets for that. And also there is wastage. So we realised that actually older consumers are the people who are more au fait with potatoes. So the over 55s purchase potatoes far more than the 25 to 55-year-old audience, they who are under-indexing for potato consumption. So we're trying to reach that sort of age range. But also within the segmentation work that we do, we can target different audiences. And so rather than just sort of reach one mass audience with very diluted messages and not many opportunities to see the advertising, we do try and be quite targeted with it. So some people, yes, may not see the advertising at all, but if they're not in the target group that we want to reach. So it's really trying to be most effective with the spend that we have. So yes, print advertising appeals to some audience groups, but the particular audience groups that we're wanting to really reach out do play in the space of social media, and that's proven to be very effective in terms of delivering the adverts, but also the engagement rate. We've had really good responses, above average engagement rate, so that's when people either like or comment or share our content.
Maybe it's just something I could add here, that one of my concerns has been that potatoes have, I think, still been seen in a really rather traditional light compared to other carbohydrates, which are seen to have modernized. And I was actually really impressed to find that following Love Potatoes on Instagram, which I do, some really fantastic recipes, which then led me onto the website. And I certainly got a lot of inspiration from that. And I do think that the team have really made some great progress in terms of starting to demonstrate how potatoes can actually be part of, you know, a healthy, convenient, easy foodstuff. So yeah, good work there by the team.
Nicola, how is, you know, success or failure of these campaigns measured, and what are the key performance indicators of that are laid down to demonstrate value for money to the levy payer?
Yeah, so as I was saying, it's quite hard to put it into actual financial terms back to the levy payer. When you have some really large scale campaigns, you can put like a mixed model in which evaluates exactly when people have been exposed to media and how that affects sales. For us, in terms of the scale of media spend, then we've been really looking at measures such as engagement rates, such as video views, such as click-through rates to the website, and then just reach and impression measures as well. So determining how many people have seen the adverts as well as either online or out of the retail or supermarkets when they're stood looking at the posters.
Nick, did we not also get an uplift in consumers agreeing that potatoes are healthy? Wasn't there a 12% uplift?
Yes, we also have a tracker, a YouGov tracker, which measures things like sentiment and opinions on relevancy, tasty, opinions on health performance. So we have some key criteria that we look at, and that's a quarterly tracker that goes out. So that's really down to attitudes. Again, it's not physical sales, but that's the idea is that we influence people to move these attitudes in a positive direction, and that's what we're seeing at the moment.
Nicola, some levy payers may, you know, criticise the HDB's reaction to the coronavirus pandemic and the marketing campaign that followed as being too sort of slow. And how do you think the HDB are adapting to become more of a flexible and reactive approach to marketing in order to capitalise on opportunities rapidly, you know, to deliver more influence to consumers and stakeholders to adjust to that?
We've got a couple of things. So we do have our social media posts on our website, which is an always on channel. So throughout the year that we put out 3 or 4 posts every week on social media, on the Facebook, Instagram and Pinterest channels, to really talk about the messages that we want to and to inspire with recipes. And then when people click through to the website, then they can see more. And we actually have the largest number of followers out of all the HDB sectors in terms of people who are on those social channels, with over 270,000 followers who click through to the site, which is really positive. So that's always ongoing. In terms of responding, I mean, obviously we responded with Bud as quickly as we could. We're actually now going out to market in February as a new campaign. And obviously delivering a new campaign does take time, but we've seen there's an opportunity that's come about from COVID actually. And with a greater number of people working at home, the opportunity for a hot filling lunch has really come to the forefront. So we work with Kantar Market Intelligence, and they've identified that this is a big opportunity. And particularly as we move into the winter months, people aren't so keen on turning to the salads and the sandwiches, although bread's seen a big rise, people wanting new inspiration. So actually we've realised that this hod filling lunch has direct relevance for potatoes, and the jacket potato occasion has actually grown by 35%, and baked potatoes itself as a product has only grown by 3%. So we've seen that there's actually quite a lot of room to grow for using a number of different potatoes in that jacket potato occasion for lunchtime. So we're currently pulling together a video-based campaign that will hopefully inspire people to think about potatoes for a lunchtime occasion. But actually, it will have a halo effect, you know, just reminding people how good jacket potatoes are. And we're going to be looking at different audience groups, different messages, different toppings, so that we can be quite reactive and look at who best be suited for different message. For example, value, particularly with the recessionary behaviours, value will be one message that we haven't really dialed up in the past. But now with this new campaign, we have the opportunity to talk about those messages. People want to have filling lunches that don't cost the earth. Jacket potato fits that occasion.
That's good to hear, because I think, you know, in the past, I think, you know, HDB seemed to have had quite a rigid, structured marketing campaign. It's good to hear that you're, you know, gathering data and consumer trends and what's in the here and now to actually formulate that marketing plan. That, as a levy payer, is good to hear. So we look forward to more of that.
Yes, it's exciting.
So, Nicola, you mentioned a new marketing campaign. I just wonder, Alison, how will the board go about, you know, just discussing the spend of the levy on the marketing budget, and what are the priorities of the board for the future?
Thanks, Michael. I mean, balance of the budget, or how we divvy up the budget on potatoes, is a source of very significant debate amongst the potato sector board. You know, as I said, there's an awareness that, you know, some levy payers think it should all be going on marketing and others think it should all be going on research. So we have to take a balanced approach. Plus, of course, we have to bear in mind there's the sort of the infrastructure costs generally of supporting potatoes. So historically, if you go back in time, we've been spending around about 11% of our budget on marketing campaigns, but that was actually also boosted by some EU funding equivalent to 8%. But in comparison, this year, our budget is going to be, will be about 13% being spent on marketing. So actually, the amount of money that we've been investing from the levy has gone up slightly. And I think the other thing I'd say is that, as Nick's been describing, the way we're spending that money, we can often get a much bigger or better bang for our buck by using this sort of kind of more clever approach to media, as opposed to big blanket TV campaigns, which can be very expensive. Obviously, Nick's talked about the kind of campaign that we've got coming up in February. And at the moment, the marketplace is enjoying a lot of volume growth overall. I mean, I appreciate some sectors are having a really, really tough time at the moment, but overall, potato volumes are on the increase. So we've been focusing very much on the sort of inspiration, relevance, how to use potatoes through this sort of recipe-led work. Medium, longer term, we'd like to look at developing a completely new campaign. And we, before we got hit by the COVID pandemic, we had actually sort of embarked on that process and been talking with different sectors of the industry about getting involved in a new campaign. It would start out as doing a pilot to see that it was effective, and then working with industry to see whether they would be willing to contribute more funding to create a bigger budget. At some point, when we're hopefully through this ghastly situation, we will revert to that and look at developing a new marketing campaign and testing that, ensuring it's effective, and then talking with industry about whether they would like to give additional support. So we will revert to that. But right now, we're very much sleeves rolled up and kind of trying to move fairly fast in response to what we're seeing going on with consumer behaviour, as Nick's been describing.
With that, the upturn in volume and sales and use of potato in the home that you've described, you know, a lot of levy payers would see, well, isn't this an opportunity to spend more on marketing and more and capitalising on that situation? What is there any means in which levy payers can convey that to the board, or would the board consider that kind of action?
Well, I think we're obviously embarking now on a real dialogue with levy payers around what they think of our strategy going forward, which is just very recently being published, and we're going into a whole series of town hall meetings. And I'd be incredibly interested to hear and be able to, well, for all of us to hear and to be able to feedback into the organisation where the weight of opinion is with regard to whether more money should be going into marketing and we should have a bigger focus around that and cutting back on areas like research and so on and kind of crop protection. Because at the end of the day, the numbers have got to balance. So I think this will be a topic which we're very keen to hear back on. And, you know, we're very much out there to listen and take feedback. we should be flagging up that pre-buy sector, or the particularly the fish and chip shop sector, has had really tough times. Hospitality, because it's kind of all sounding kind of quite positive, but some sectors of the industry have had a brutal time. And to be honest, there's probably relatively limited amount of stuff we can do on that. And it does seem frustrating that quite a lot of the fish and chip shop sector were perhaps slower to respond to the new trend and do things like takeaways compared to other parts of the hospitality industry. And we've entered into some discussions and tried to encourage fresh thinking there, but there's a limit to what AHDB can do in such an extraordinary situation such as the pandemic. Another area that it's worth highlighting here is the amazing work that's been done by the MI team, the market intelligence team, and a great sense of pressure to get statistics and facts about what is going on out to our levy payers much faster to really help with those kinds of decisions that you're referring to, is, you know, what they should be planting, what sectors of the market are doing well, not doing well. And equally, there's been a lot of fantastic information and insight with regard to consumer behaviour. Who knows how that's going to pan out in the future? But I think the more we can be giving this sort of evidence, insight, information to help our levy payers make decisions, the better. And if people haven't looked at some of the consumer webinars in particular, then they're still available on playback via the website, and I'd highly recommend them.
The money invested on your behalf by AHDB in storage research amounts to £500,000 a year. Our second interview is with Adrian Cunnington, head of Sutton Bridge Crop Storage Research and a levy payer from North Yorkshire.
Hello, I'm Adrian Cunnington from AHDB's Sutton Bridge Crop Storage Research Centre, and I'm talking this afternoon to Tim Rook, who farms on the edge of the North Yorkshire Moors. And together we are going to discuss the storage support AHDB offers to the potato sector. Tim, can you tell me a little bit about how the loss of CIPC has impacted your business?
Yes, Adrian, it's impacted my business immensely. From the very start of finding that we lost it and we were having to make sure that there was no residue levels in the store, I spent about 3 weeks cleaning stores out this summer, to the point of what are we going to do next, and how, with me growing for processing for both crisping and chipping, it's been like back to school day.
I think that's the case. We're all on a learning curve, even those who've been in the business a long time. You mentioned that you've done some store cleaning, Tim. Have you found that particularly challenging? Did you find the guidelines that we put out useful?
I found the guidelines excellent, actually. We've done a damn good job of cleaning these stores out, and it was about time that they were done to this level. So I don't think we wasted 1 minute in what we did with cleaning these stores up and getting them ready for mint oil or ethanol. I think it's been a very, very worthwhile experience.
That's interesting to hear. Yes, I mean, we're going now to have to comply with the new temporary maximum residue level of 0.4 mgs per kilo. So that means that we very much reduced level of CIPC that's allowed. And so I think it is important that kind of store cleaning effort is put in. And that will be particularly the case by next season when the new TMRL actually comes into force. Our experience from AHDB trials is that we have been able to clean stores and keep below that 0.4 mgs per kilo. So I think you should be okay, but we can't afford to be complacent about this, because the TMRL will be monitored as part of an ongoing stewardship program for CIPC. And that is an important aspect of managing what is now essentially a banned chemical. So that's where we're at, and it's good to hear that you've had a good experience in dealing with that. So Tim, did you use maleic hydrazide on your crop this year?
Yes we did, Adrian. We've always been a big user of it, because I have a store that we refused to put CIPC gas in the past, because it was a seed store as well. But I treated the whole crop this year with it, and so far results are looking pretty good.
Yeah, so the maleic hydrazide does give a residual effect on sprouting, which is important, I think, this year, now that we've lost CIPC, because there are very few alternatives that do give that residual control. And I think that will be important in the long-term storage. So what are your other alternatives that you had to consider, Tim?
Other than malic hydroxide, the only other alternative that I've been using is what I was recommended by McCain's, which was ethylene. So that's set up and good to go. And I'm in the process of, I think I'm putting my first mint oil application on next week, and basically sat there waiting to do both. I think we've had such a good application of MH. I'm actually seeing no sprouts in any store at all at the moment. And that's more or less potatoes being kept at 9 degrees. So we, especially this season, try to do MH to the best of our ability. And I do think we've gone an extra mile this year by putting extra water on, getting it absolutely at the right end of the day, applying it in the evening and the correct temperature. And I think the results so far are looking very, very good.
That's interesting to hear, because we've been doing quite a lot of work on MH at the HDB Spot Farms, and it has looked at those aspects that you've just mentioned, water volume and time of application. We've got more work to do on it, but it certainly seems to be something that we can optimise quite a lot with a bit of attention to detail.
Adrian, I'd like to ask you about malic hydroxide, because it's a big problem to us is the fact that two of the varieties that we actually put it on, one's Innovator and one's VR808, and both crops seem as though they very soon fall off the edge of a cliff as far as they just start to defoliate. And you can't get it on soon enough, especially with VR808 when you're looking for the tuber above 20 millimetres. And I've been asking the question to everybody, can we put this product on earlier? Because you put it on something like VR808 and then you realise in a couple, 2 to 3 weeks that the crop started to defoliate and you think it just hasn't had long enough. Something like Brook or Pentland Dell, there's no problem. Marquise is no problem. The crop keeps green for such a long period. The fact that it's going to die back is never a problem with MH, but there's some varieties that are just wanting to start to die back. And it'd be interesting if we could do more and more research just to see how early we could actually get the MH on for those crops that soon go back.
Yeah, I agree. I think every variety is different, and optimising for individual varieties is something that we have got to bring into the research programme a lot more in the future. I think earlier applications certainly will give you better control in store. The downside of that is if you go on too soon that you start to impact your yield, and I think that's quite a fine balance to have to strike. We are this year doing quite a lot of assessments on MH residues to see whether we've actually achieved the levels that we need in the tuber, and we're working on a threshold of 12 mgs per kilo as the ideal level as a minimum, and that's something that we will be reporting on at the end of the season.
Thank you, Adrian.
So you mentioned the use of alternatives. So the ethylene that you're using, that is specific within processing, I think, to McCain's, because they can handle it in their factories. And also you mentioned spearmint oil, which is probably being used much more widely across the processing sector, both in crisping and also in chip shop markets. And I think that the early indications are that that product is doing a good job. The downside of it, of course, is the cost, which is significantly higher than CIPC. But in terms of getting a crop to delivery in the new year, then I think that spearmint oil will perform, and we will just have to wait and see how many applications we need to get for some of the longer term contracts.
Yes, and as far as the mint oil goes, we've had to do quite a fair bit of work to the stores by putting PowerPoints outside for the fogging machines, by sealing them up even more than we were. I've installed 4 new roller shutter doors on stores this time. What I would say, there's been a lot of expense here for mint oil, but the positive side of it is everything we're doing, if we do start to use DMN, everything we're doing, we would have had to do for DMN. So it isn't as though we've gone down a a one route alley here to get round a problem. We're only doing what we would have had to do anyway.
Yes, totally agree with that. I think it is important. Again, those details are done because these chemicals are very volatile and very easily lost from store. So if we don't seal them up well enough, that's a lot of money going out on the wind, so to speak. And that's really been the objective of this storage network program that AHDB has been running. I believe you haven't had a storage network visit yet, Tim, but free advice on the farm one-to-one from somebody who's been looking at this in detail, you'd find that valuable, wouldn't you?
I would find that valuable. And I must say that I'd actually forgotten that you were running this. When I looked it up, I thought, yes, that was a route I should have probably gone down. I would recommend to anybody, before they get the fogging man in to put mint oil on, or DMN even, is just to make sure that they are 100% happy with the site before they come, because nearly every store I had needed an alteration doing to it as far as the power point, where the gas goes in, which was different to how we were applying CIPC.
Okay, so I think it would also be worth mentioning for the benefit of our listeners the importance of maintaining quality over the full storage period, Tim, and have you got any particular questions on that topic?
I find totally frustrating that the way forward out of this storage problem as far as crisping goes, and even for processing chips, is that it would be nice if there was more research done into varieties that would store at colder temperatures. I think we use an awful lot of electricity trying to keep stores at the right temperature. I've often said it's like trying to cool a hot cup of tea down with warm water. It just takes forever. Be nice if there was more research done into different varieties that we could use, but I'm quite happy where we are, Adrian. I think you're doing a good job on storage at your end, but I think the whole ethos of what we grow in the industry needs a big look at the moment.
I would agree with you, Tim. Actually, I'm looking at our long-term strategies for AHDB's potato storage program, and the focus on integrated potato store management is very much coming to the fore. The need to start with the right varieties, we need the natural dormancy, we need the low temperature tolerance, we then need to be able to assess risks better in terms of which crops might stall for longest. And it's only after we've done all those basics, which need to be brought into the program, that we can then start looking at the more conventional interventions, such as how much we blow the crop and how much we change the temperature. And then right at the top of the pyramid, if you like, is the use of chemicals, which I think, given changes that we've seen in recent years, will inevitably be diminished over time. So I think that the points you're raising are very valid in terms of a long-term objective for storage.
The conversation then moves on to the latest successes of the AHDB team, obtaining DMN emergency use approval at the beginning of December, making emergency use applications for new sprout suppressants, and coordinating representatives from all industry sectors to contribute to the submissions is one of the most valuable services for levy payers offered by AHDB.
We are pleased that we've recently received emergency use approval for DMN, and that's come from a number of initiatives that have taken place across the industry. And I believe you were involved in some of those early meetings, Tim, back in February, March time.
Yeah, that's right, Adrian. I attended Sandhutton. I am vice chairman of the NFU Potato Forum, and I attended in that capacity. And we got, I think it was to emphasise to the people at FARA how important it was that we got DMN approval. We then took them round quite a few stores in the area that were storing crisping, and the emphasis generally was on crisping, how to be able to keep them long term all the way till May, June at temperatures at 8 and 9 degrees minimum. It was going to be a difficult ask when we didn't know how good mint oil would be and it seemed as though there was no other alternative on the market due to the fact that the crisping industry were not happy to use ethylene. So we wanted to stress to them, we showed them crisp colours, we went down to Cockerell's and we looked at fry colours, and we feel that we maybe did a bit of good, and it's good news that we've now got this emergency approval. But what that means in the bigger picture, I don't think any of us are still that sure, actually.
I think it's certainly a positive move that we've got that chemical available, albeit for a very small proportion of our industry at the moment. The difficulty with emergency approvals is that because they are an emergency measure, they are very closely controlled. And in this instance, we've had to limit the use of DMN to long-term processing crops entering controlled waste chains, because CRD didn't want to give us approval for that chemical to be used and get into the livestock feed chain. So that has to be separated out, and that's the important restriction from their perspective, but it does very much limit the amount of DMN that we will be able to use this season to some very specific markets. I think on a wider note, the fact that they have issued this emergency approval is a positive move, and I'm hopeful that if we can comply with the terms of the emergency approval, then we could hopefully see DMN much more widely available in 2021, although it is still going through its full analysis, and so we can't count our chickens too early. But I think it's a move in the right direction, and it is something that will add to our portfolio of options for sprout control in the future, hopefully, which will mean that we can tailor our regimes a lot more closely and in line with those integrated management objectives that I mentioned earlier.
Yeah, well, as you said, Adrian, I feel it is good news. I think a lot of hard work has gone into this, and let's hope, as you say, it's a small step forward, and hopefully we get full approval for this next season.
Our third interview is with grower Danny Nichols and Tim Isaac, the Knowledge Exchange Director with AHDB.
Hello and welcome to this AHDB podcast about strategic potato farms. I'm Tim Isaac, Director of Knowledge Exchange AHDB. I'm joined today by one of the thousands of farmers who've got involved, Danny Nichols from Beeswax Dyson Farming, to talk specifically about our strategic potato farms known as spot farms. Thanks very much, Danny, for joining us today. We met last year at your base up in Lincolnshire, and I think you're the farm foreman there, Danny. Do you want to tell us a bit more about yourself?
Yeah, Danny Nichols, work for Beeswax Dyson Farming on the Nocton farm. Farm foreman, I've been said, and potato manager, responsible for all the starting buying of the seed, to making sure it comes down okay, to the cultivations, to the irrigation, to the harvest, and to the storage, and making sure everything's good and to sell at the end. Growing 500 acres of potatoes at the Nocton site and about 250 acres from the Carrington site or down at Leadenhall, which I also get involved with as well.
Danny, I was just interested in what sort of markets you're growing for mainly.
Growing for the processing and packing market, to be fair. We've got contractors for crisping varieties, and we also do quite a bit with McCain's as well. And then for the packing market, we supply straight into Morrison's, and then we do quite a bit with other small packers that seem to predominantly go into Lidl and places like that. So,
thanks, Dan. What sort of involvement have you had with the spot farms to date?
Generally, it's just attending, to be fair. Always keen to get on and help where we can, but it's just been attending, going out to the events and the meetings and gleaning the information off what I can.
And is that mostly spot north that you've been visiting?
Yeah, I've always been spot north, so I've been up to the one at Godfrey's. Been to both those events, obviously this year's been a bit snookered. And then I have been down to a couple at Elfden before we started going up to Godfrey's.
And what's your sort of overall impression of the programme and what have you got out of it so far?
Things that you get out of them, it's, I think the layout of the programme and the fields trials, they're always laid out fairly well, and they're trying to cover the up-and-coming scenarios that we're going to be faced with, the lack of chemicals and what we can do to get around it and so on. And I think one of the sort of biggest thing for me, it's gauging sort of where people are with the market, what people are looking at it, gaining what yields they are, what the quality is like, gauging on for selling, really.
What sort of things are you like to see us doing on the farms going forward?
It's just keep going. I mean, we've obviously done the topping ones. Still think there's a lot to be learned. It's probably in the field trial with the storage side of things, but still I think it's something that that needs to be done. There's still a lot of work with the desiccation side of field. There's all sorts of ways to desiccate. We're basically at Nocton, we're back to topping, and we have been for a while because we use trickle tape irrigation. So the answers have already been answered, if you like, or the questions have already been answered. So I think it'd be good going forward to probably do some things on cover crops. We're always trying to go forward and find what's new and coming up and what we can do better for the environment here at Beeswax. So I think one of the big things for us would be cover crops throughout the winter, which we are doing some work and trying it for the potato land. And on the cultivation side of things, would be a fair comment from me, I would say.
I think they're really good thoughts. We've tried some of that on some of the other sites, so I think it would be good to replicate that over more of the farms and have a look at it. As you say, they're really relevant, aren't they, right now? I sort of feel I've asked you a few questions, Danny, so you've probably got a few questions for me, haven't you?
Yeah, sort of questions. With all the trials and what we can do, it's always a wonder to me sort of what level of research done by the AHDB influences what goes on the spot farm trials, or is it influenced by outside sort of people other than that, sort of chemical companies, seed companies, etc.?
Yeah, it's a good question, Danny. I mean, I think the key point about all of our work, it's totally independent because it's levy funded, so we're free of any sort of commercial bias, but obviously we need to reflect the fact that there are commercial products available on farm, so it's important for us to maintain that independent analysis. And clearly the research, it's definitely one of the main factors that we consider when we're looking at the trials and demonstrations, because I think it's really important for HDB to get the research we fund out onto farm into a commercial setting. But equally, we welcome other ideas and innovations from the farmers we work with, plus also the research conducted by others both at home and abroad. We're not precious about it. I think it's quite a diverse mix, and we try to provide a range of topics relevant to the area. So, yeah, I think that covers that, really.
Yeah, so part of that answer's led on to my next sort of question, really, I guess. Often's wondered, is there ever any opportunity for sort of levy payers, if you like, to have their input into the trials and thoughts to what they go on? Like, I've already suggested one or two things that would be good on the cover crop side of things. Is there any ever chance of that input coming through from the levy payer?
Very much so. Whether that's sort of formally through the grower-led steering groups, or it's more informally by just contacting your local knowledge exchange manager with your ideas. I mean, for me, it's very much a farmer-led programme, so all the feedback is really very much welcome. It's a balance, isn't it? Some of the work we do aims to address sort of local challenges experienced by growers, which are usually identified by the host. So, for example, a lot of the work in Scotland would be focused on seed production, as you'd expect. In other cases, the farms might host national multi-site trials taking place across the network. So a recent example of that would be our desiccation work, where we had a fully replicated trial held across 6 sites. But other topics have included pest and disease control, nutrition, cultivations, water management, all the sort of topics you'd expect us to see. But certainly always welcome any feedback or views on other things. We definitely don't have the monopoly on ideas, and we recognise that an awful lot of good things quite often come up on farm just through sort of necessity. And if there's an opportunity for us to test that more robustly in a sort of a proper setting, then we're very happy to do that.
What would be the best way for us to get our ideas across, come through? How do we get our ideas across there for trialing? Is it by hosting the event, or what's the sort of protocol for doing that across?
Best first point of contact would be in your case, Amber, so your local knowledge exchange manager, and that would be the case across the country. And then they can advise whether it's something that we can incorporate on one of the existing host sites, or whether, we do what we call sort of satellite activity, where we look at demonstrations and other farms as well. We've always got to be a little bit mindful, obviously, of budget and time. Some of these demonstrations, to do them properly, aren't always cheap to do. So, we obviously need to be very careful with the money that we spend to ensure that it's the best return. But yeah, I guess the bottom line is we're very open to have those sort of discussions and explore what opportunities there are, really.
Moving on to sort of that side, we've gone on from trials and moving on a bit now. And all the trials are very interesting, chance whatever they may be, whether it be fungicide, desiccation or nutrition, whatever it is. But when you've seen done all the work and you've been to the spot farms, you've seen what it achieves and you've gone to results day, is there ever any sort of practical cost analysed at the side of these trials to put back to the grower so they can get a bit of a feel for how much a ton or how much a hectare this is all going to cost, so they can sort of like work off a budget off what the trials have been done.
I think that's a really important point, Danny. It's all very well, isn't it, looking at a field and seeing that something looks greener, but you don't necessarily know whether it's giving you any greater return or what impact it's having on your costs. So I think it is. It's a really important part of it. So, I mean, wherever possible, the costs associated with a particular trial or demonstration, they will be captured and they'll be presented alongside the technical findings. So you can see both the technical impact and the cost implications. Most of our hosts will also calculate and compare their cost of production using our Farm Bench program. And that allows us to then compare the costs of, say, the new method with the conventional practice on that farm. So you can get that obviously direct comparison on farm. All of the results are then made widely available through our events and also our website. And our Farm Bench program is being used by an increasing number of other growers, so you can do your own comparisons. So, for example, last year the farms entered on the program represented over 7,000 hectares of production. So, you know, it's quite a significant amount of data that's entered onto the system, and then quite a few of those growers then attend meetings that we run to help identify and discuss any possible areas of improvement where they, you know, they might be lower or higher than their peers depending on what the factor is we're looking at.
Fair answer. Yeah, good. And in sight of all the trials and the costs and everything else, come back onto the year that 2020 has been, and I think whether you like New Year's Eve or not, everybody's looking forward to 2021. But in spite of all the problems that's been gone on with 2020 and all the rest of it, has it affected the way the trials have been done in any way this year? Sort of taking it back to lab work or out in the field with how all the trials are done, has it had any effect on what's been done and looked at this year?
Yeah, it's been an interesting year, hasn't it, in that respect? And certainly who'd have thought when we were at the beginning of the year it was going to quite play out as it did. So I think, I mean, the good thing about the trials and the demonstrations on farm, they've been able to continue just as they would have done before quite safely throughout coronavirus. There's been no issue there. What we have had to do, obviously, is not run the physical events. So we've largely been running them digitally. So just thinking about before we started talking, Danny, I just sort of checked in on a few of our stats that we've got. Just looking at the 6 months from May to October this year, we had over 1,000 potato growers, agronomists and processors attending the webinars that we've been running. And the nice thing about those is you can obviously listen back afterwards. So we've got another 1,400 people on top of that that would have listened back to the recording. So, you know, in terms of the engagement, actually, you could argue that the digital sort of channel is almost more effective than the physical in many ways. We've obviously also got podcasts like this. They're increasingly popular because obviously you can listen in where and when convenient, you know, in the tractor cab, when in the field or wherever you might be. So actually, whilst we thought COVID at the beginning was a real threat to our K activity and particularly the work of the spot farms, it's worked quite well. It's played in our favour and we've probably got a great audience engaging with us now than we had previously. The key, I think, probably, Danny, going forward is how we keep that momentum. How do we keep the digital audience, but also give the people that want to just come along on farm the opportunity to do so as well?
Yeah, good. Yeah, it sounds like the message is getting across. I mean, many ways it's maybe got you a far bigger audience and maybe done you quite a few favours sort of loosely, but I think you're quite right. It's always good to have the physical aspect of it there. It's one thing I've certainly missed this year, just that sort of going out and seeing it in the raw, if you like, and meeting people, which sort of, I guess with all that and the fact that we've got a bigger audience, well, what would the possibility or something I'm keen on, of getting other people that are loosely connected to the potato industry outside farmers. So if you take right down to the bottom, the end user, the chefs and people like that, big companies and the sort of pack houses, people that manage there and see it onto to the supermarket shelf, if you like, what would the chance of getting them down there? And do you think the benefit? I think they would benefit. And I think sort of it would be a good link to get it from the farmer out in the field all the way down the industry right to the end user. What's your sort of thoughts on that?
Danny, I think it's a spot on thought, actually. So I think the supply chain is, I mean, it's always important in potatoes, but I think the exit of the EU and various other factors are going to bring that supply chain into even greater focus. So I think it will be really important for us to make sure that we are engaging with them even more than we already have. So I mean, to answer the question, yes, absolutely, all are welcome. We've got a lot of people from the trade and the agronomy sector and the supply chain more widely already attending the events, and we already run some tailored meetings specifically for certain groups, so we're very happy to sort of facilitate those sort of visits. Equally, I think, you know, it's good to take groups of growers along to see the other end as well, as you say, see the processes and see the markets and get a better understanding of what's happening at that end, so we can all communicate better through that supply chain. I think for me, in terms of the discussions that we have on the farm or in the webinars, it's really good when we have, you know, the trade in there as well, because I think it just brings another angle to the discussion and we get a different view on things. We also provide quite a lot of activity specifically for agronomists. So whether it's an induction day for new recruits or regional agronomy events or our popular annual conference. For example, we had over 1,000 register on our recent agronomy week, which was for a lot of the advisors involved in the sector. So all of the things we do are aimed at, you know, giving that insight into the latest work we do, the latest work we fund, the innovations we've identified. We've got that roadshow of storage events that we do, which are also obviously very relevant to the supply chain and the processes, because it's they've obviously got a big interest in that as well. So we do some, but I agree with you. I think we could do more, and I think the more we can engage throughout the supply chain, the better for everyone.
Yeah, that's good, really. It's something I feel quite passionate about, sort of spreading the message how the food gets to it. And it's something that we do quite a lot here at Beeswax. I have no qualms with showing anybody around the potato field or the potato store, whether it be somebody who wants to use my potatoes in the kitchen or even a school visit who are just interested in it. So, yeah, that's quite good and encouraging. I think it's something that we could probably all work on together. So, yeah, I mean, what with all that, I've asked the questions and sort of got out what you can, but I would sort of think, what out of all the money that gets paid by the levy payers and everything, what would you have thought, blowing your own trumpet or however you want to word it, would be the best results that the AHDB have had in all the trials, and what's the best findings, if you like?
Where to start, Danny? Yeah, I think in terms of the farm network, probably as you will have seen, most of the things that we do there are around reducing costs and improving yields. And I guess one of the challenges we've got is, can we clearly demonstrate that something we've done has specifically contributed to that better yield or that lower cost? And of course, as you know, there are lots of other factors involved, aren't there? So it would be wrong of me to say that everything that's been achieved on farms that have engaged as a result has been directly to do with us. But I think we have contributed quite a bit in that area. So, and we've got some good examples. There was a grower I was talking to recently who reckoned they'd saved £65 per hectare and increased their marketable yield at the same time. We've had others who've reduced their cultivation costs, others who've tried new varieties, you know, to help control PCN. We've done a lot of work around finding alternatives to the loss of both in-field and in-store products, which has obviously been quite a big theme of the last year or two, and that's obviously something we'll continue with. We do actually survey people, so it's not just based on our own feedback. So we survey a lot of people who attend the events, and the most recent one was telling us that, so 92% reckon they'd improve their technical knowledge and 78% said they'd increase their profitability. Now both of those are direct result of attending the event. So, you know, I think based on the feedback we're getting, people are obviously getting an awful lot out of the spot farm activity and the wider events, which is great, and that's obviously what we'll help to build on going forward. But there's always more we can do.
Yeah, I think the more you put into everything, the more you get out of it. And it's good to hear that sort of people are getting feedback and saving money and earning money at the same time. How would you sort of advise growers, if you like, to get the best out of AHDB? So a few examples there that can come along and people have saved money, gain marketable yield and so on. But how would you advise growers to get that information? What would your step of advice be for us as growers, or myself as a grower, to seek that information out and get the most out of it?
The thing for me is, if you haven't yet engaged with whether it's the spot farms or the wider activity we do, I think my message that I always say to people is you don't know until you try. It's kind of what you were saying there, Danny. You know, if you want something out of something, you've got to get involved, haven't you? So I think if people haven't made it along to one of the events yet, then check on the HDB website. Everything's there about what's coming up near you, and, you know, just come along. So talk to your local knowledge exchange manager, look on the website, come along to an event or dial onto a webinar. And I think if people haven't got involved before, they'll be really surprised how many people they know and how many people they recognise. And also, I think how much you get out of it. But as I say, people will only know that if they give it a try. A really good place to start, actually, it's quite timely, is we've got our Spot Farm Results Week, which is coming up in the third week of January. And that's a sort of summary of and roundup of all the year's work on the spot farms across the country. So if people go onto our events page or our website and sign up for that, for those webinars through that week, they'll get a really good insight into everything that's going on. That will give them a really good flavour of the sort of work we're doing. And then they can probably decide from there whether it's for them and how much more they want to engage going forward. I think my view is there's so much change in the industry happening right now, and that's going to carry on being the case for the foreseeable future. I think coming along to our events is just a great way of helping people navigate all of that change and sort of talking with whether it's trade or research experts or fellow growers or agronomists or whoever it might be, but just, you know, talk through the issues, get all the latest information, whether it's market insight or research analysis. And hopefully people will come out the other side with a more resilient business. It's just about the more information you've got access to, the better informed the decisions you can make, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely quite agree. I mean, it's always sort of been mine. And the more you put into it and the more you throw yourself out there, the more you learn, which is why I'm not hugely techified and sitting down and stuff, but to go out to the practical things is the way I do it, and learn quite a lot on it from over the years, I guess. So, that's interesting, really. Last question. But being a bit cheeky, really, obviously oil pay into the levy as levy payers, and it costs a lot. Does the levy money go to anything else other than trials, or what else do the levy payers get for the money besides all the trials funding? Does it go anywhere else?
Absolutely, yeah. And you're right to flag that, Danny, because obviously we've talked a lot about the spot farms and the knowledge exchange activity, which is sort of closest to my heart. But yes, as a whole, HDB does a whole load of other stuff. And it's all, I guess it's all driven around the common commitment to help the British potato sector. And so I guess a few other examples I could give is, in recent years, we've invested about $500,000 a year in storage research, which is obviously a really, really important area. We've done some marketing campaigns, so we've influenced 12% more consumers to think that potatoes are healthy. You know, it's a constant message we need to get across. We've educated over 5 million primary school children. We've got a Grow Your Own Potatoes program, which is really, really popular in the schools, and it really just raises the profile of the potato at that level. And, of course, they go home and tell mum and dad all about it, and it just reinforces the role of the potato in home diets. So we've talked a lot about, obviously, the research and care activity in terms of productivity and profitability, so I won't go over that again. And I suppose the other big areas around crop protection. So we invest about $750,000 a year in crop protection research, and we've got a fairly big program of pest and disease monitoring that you can log on to and make sure you're getting the latest information about pest and disease activity to hopefully get yourself ahead of the game and put yourself in a position where you can make decisions to stop a problem from becoming a crisis. You know, it's that sort of, again, it's that latest information and insight. So yeah, there's a whole breadth of activity there. It's all very clear on the website.
That's interesting. Always interesting to know, so loosely put it, to know where the change goes. It's good to see that it doesn't go on the Christmas party. Really like the fact that you're getting it out into schools and doing grow your own potatoes and things like that. I really think that's a spot on idea. So yeah, that's good. No more questions. I think you've answered them all. Yeah, spot on. Yeah, really pleased.
Thank you, Danny. Thank you.
Thank you to all our contributors to this podcast. If you have any comments about this podcast or ideas for future episodes, please get in touch via the link in the show notes. Also, AHDB wants you to have your say, and in January and February, you can join virtual town hall meetings to have your questions answered. Meet members of the AHDB team and potato sector board members. You'll have the opportunity to submit questions before each meeting or join the virtual stage and speak directly with the team. The first meeting takes place on the 7th of January, and the proposals outlined in the AHDB Change Programme and Strategy are the topics for discussion. In February, a series of open meetings takes place looking at the AHDB work relevant to the different parts of the potato industry. Each session is open to all levy payers and tailored to the different elements of work that benefits particular parts of the sector. To find out more about the potatoes town hall meetings, please visit ahdb.org.uk/potatoes-town-hall. The address is in the show notes, which accompanies this podcast. Thanks to podcast producer Maria Kovlia. Stay safe, stay well. I'm John Bates. Thanks for listening.